You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we're also heard on the World Wide Web. My name, Sita Begee, is in the newspaper. So if you Google Sita Begee, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends come up, and there's a way to listen live.
There certainly is. 1510wwbc.com. You can go to that website. There are two buttons there. One is the Listen Live button. You may have to download something, but it's a pretty quick download. You can listen live to the show each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Or you can get our archive shows by hitting the On Demand button and just picking the date. We are here, like I said, every single Monday. Fantastic guests for the last 12 years.
Yeah, it's part of our life. We can't get away.
There's a lot of people.
We can't get away from our good friends.
That's right.
Choose to come on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So, Ellen.
And great picture in the paper, by the way, or online. I didn't actually.
It was online.
Paper,
yes. Online, so, we sit here every Monday, Ellen and myself. Samantha does our social media, and she's with us at times. And we talk about issues that are going on around the world. We talk about kitchen table topics, things like equality and opportunity and justice and empowerment and respect and freedom and all the great things. We know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And we have found a gold mine in authors. Yes. We have found that all our friends who wrote books, whether it's a book about financial literacy, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, biography, autobiographies, historical books,
adventures,
they have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And we're learning every Monday, each and every Monday, something new, whether it's Christopher Columbus, whether it's gold, whether it's spices from the Middle East. And today's no different. Right. We've got two great guests today. We've got Mike Oppenheim, who is calling in to speak about his show. He has a podcast called Coffin Talk, not Coffee, Coffin Talk.
Coffin Talk, right.
And he's also an author. And Mike is going to talk about a few of the books he's written. And he's an amazing guy. I mean, he's got his podcast. He's on YouTube. He's an author. He's also, in some respects, an activist. And he's done a lot of great things.
Right. He's also the founder and director of the Let Us Reason Ministries, which began in 1994. So
right.
Fantastic as
and
well.
He writes a weekly blog. And then our second segment, Ellen, you found us a great guy. You found us.
One of my buds.
One of your buds is here in studio with us. Wayne Gales, mm-hmm. That's easy to say.
Yeah.
He was born in California, and Wayne, after 17 years stint in Las Vegas, he moved to Central Florida and lived in the Florida Keys and worked as a director in the hospitality business. He's published a series of 8 fictional novels, and he's written 5 that illustrated children's books. And we're going to speak to Wayne, the world traveler, Wayne.
That's right.
In the second segment. Wayne, I hope you could say welcome to, tell our listeners that you're here. And
good afternoon.
And greet them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great
and he
to be
was
here.
Also in the paper about a week or so ago in the hometown news as well. So we got another hometown hero this week.
And then Allie.
Yeah, Allie Tambor is here with us as well, our good friend.
We have another Allie. You know, we have Allie Kumara too.
I know.
Allie Tambor is here. And Allie is visiting with us, and she's going to sit in, and maybe she'll jump in when Mike starts speaking or Wayne. Mm-hmm. But before we go to Mike, who is on hold, hi, Mike. Thanks for taking the time to call in.
Hi, how are you?
We'll be right with you. We're doing wonderful. We just want to say this weekend was a great weekend here in Brevard County, Florida. We had a women's march, and a few of us braved it in the hot sun.
Yes.
I have renewed respect for people who work in the fields, people who are mending our roofs, building our houses, cleaning our
outside.
Drains, canals, fixing FBL poles. I mean, I had a list when I in my head this morning, and Ellen, who sings in the hot sun as well, and Wayne, who goes to listen, yes, and Allie, who listens. Because, you know, the heat is not a friend, and I hope everyone who's working out in the heat is staying hydrated. And I sure hope they have health insurance. I swear to God, I always think about people who work in outdoors, and I'm like, I hope you have health insurance.
Yeah.
Because if you get sick in that heat, you know. But so I sit in the heat for 3.5 hours to hold up my sign and speak about the importance of our rights as women. And then my granddaughter's birthday was at the Sun Tree Country Club, and we were out in the sun again.
Wow.
So there we go. But anyways, great day. And our show today is all about good people who have found their purpose in life to give back. Mm-hmm. We've lived, we've learned, we are bolder, we're older, we're wiser, and we're giving back to the world. And Mike Oppenheim is one of those guys. So Mike, welcome to our show, and thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Of course, thank you so much. And as I live in Phoenix, Arizona, so all everything you said about the heat and people who work in it, oh my gosh, more power to them, yes.
I know, because so many people will tell you right off the bat, I can't work outside, I have to be indoors, right? And it's like, yeah, we just have to respect those people, because at the end of the day, they're fellow human beings that just like all of us, trying to make a living and take care of their families, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
So I saw something on Facebook, and it reminded me of what you're doing. It says, life humbles you as you age. You realize how much time you have wasted on nonsense. And how many people have really done that, where, you know, you got into conversation, or you got into scuffles, or maybe you took a job that you didn't like, but you did it anyway. And then one day you say, aha, I have something to tell. And you have done so much. So let's start off with, you live in Arizona, but you're also an author. You have the blog. You're doing Coffin Talk. Talk to us a little bit about how you got started in the entertainment business.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I got started when I was a little kid. They always tell parents, like, watch screen time, don't let kids watch too much TV. Now they say don't play on a phone. All I ever did as a kid was watch TV, and I credit television as the number one reason I'm a creative, talented person. So unlike many people, I actually think watching entertainment is what will probably lead you into entertainment, and whether you end up being on, you know, the outside looking in behind the camera, or you're a screenwriter, or you're an actor, it doesn't really matter. Entertainment is, I think, most people's favorite thing in the world. Like, most of us work hard so that we can be entertained later, and we want to all enjoy ourselves on Earth. So, you know, at a young age, I wanted to make things like the things that entertain me, and so I just like doing everything. I started out with writing, and then I moved into film, and then I was a musician. I mean, I still do all these things, so like you said, I have done YouTube shows recently. So yeah, I love the idea of just helping people relax and feel a little bit better, because especially right now, with the way we perceive ourselves right now, we think we're very divided and we're full of hate and we're very angry. I don't think for a second that's actually true. I think that most of us are dying for some just genuine entertainment and the ability to relax. And in the meantime, we should be giving, like you said, helping others.
Yeah, and you know what it is too? A lot of people, they make mistakes and they don't learn from them, right? But yeah, when I spoke with you and we talk about, you know, Coffin Talk, it's all mm-hmm. about spirituality, forgiveness, finding your footing in the world, and giving back in such a way that you leave a good footprint on Earth. How did you start Coffin Talk? Because I am so interested in how you can use the dead to give advice to the living, and how you can reach out into the outer space of God knows where we all end up to try to make our world a better place. How did you get started with that?
Sure, absolutely. So Coffin Talk is the name of my podcast. I do it with my wife and my brother. I'm the host, and I'm the only person you're going to hear on the show, but I just want to give them credit. They helped me a lot. And the idea for the show came from one of my more successful essays that I'd written, which came from my experience in hospice as a volunteer. So I went through a divorce and a lot of other stuff that went through that, and psychologically it was pretty hard for me, because growing up, I don't think anyone thinks I'm going to get married and then get a divorce, and we had a child, and he was involved, so I had much more free time than I ever thought I was going to have, because we were sharing custody. So I started volunteering at the local hospice here in Phoenix, Arizona, which is actually the place where hospice was first started in America. The first one ever was in England, but we were the second one ever. And so I started volunteering in hospice, and I stepped I kept talking to people as they were dying, and they all said the exact same thing. They said, if I could just go back, I would have fought less, I would have argued less, I would have been nicer, I would have let things go. And number one with the bullet, I would have spent much more time with my family and friends. And this kind of also goes into that whole thing I just said about entertainment. So anyway, flash forward, I met the love of my life, my wife. We actually now have a child, so I have a second child, and we got married, and I ran out of time again. So I wasn't able to do hospice. So I thought, well, maybe I can kind of like carry that message in a different medium. And so, you know, podcasting, it's pretty easy. You just need to get the equipment and set it up, and then you put it online. And I don't think it's better than radio. I think it's a totally different format. And I'm a huge radio fan, by the way. I should mention that. Love, love, love radio. So Coffin Talk to Me is a pet project that I'm really hoping does what you said, which is getting people to reconsider how stoic we sometimes get about our own beliefs, because your beliefs can change, and it's probably a good thing if they do change. It's probably a good thing if life is kind of sending you softer or even harder messages to say, hey, maybe you should rethink what you're fighting against, because sometimes when you fight against something, you're the only victim. And I also don't want to confuse this, though, with, like, activism. Of course it's a good idea to go out and have activism for your right to your own body and things like that, you know, and I don't want to get too political about anything on this show, but, you know, I think we all know our purpose, like you said.
Yes.
And so for me, my purpose is just to get people to consider the fact that we're all going to leave, and you're going to leave. So start thinking about that, and start thinking about the legacy you want to leave.
Yeah, and the thing is, you use Coffin Talk to talk about debt, but you do it in such a way that it's not serious. You actually make people understand that, hey, we're here, all of us on the planet right now, we're all going to be gone one day. And you're not, your blog plus Coffin Talk, it's not scary. You have a lot of inspiring people on there and motivating people that talk about life and death from all different cultures. Let's talk a little bit about...
And perspectives,
yeah,
too. Like,
yeah.
I said, I'm just sort of scrolling through the episodes and so forth. You've got authors on here. You've got police officials that either retired or otherwise. People from Japan, people from the UK. So all different perspectives on dying, death. And what that means,
right,
and living life.
Right, and a lot of people, I mean, here in the United States, it is a topic that I believe a lot of people don't talk enough about. But in the Middle Eastern cultures, and in India, in Japan, in China, speaking about death and the dying is some sort of a worship towards the ancestors as well. So let's chat a little bit about some of the people you've had on Coffin Talk. Ellen, not Coffee Talk.
Right.
So let's
chat. That's for fun, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've had, like, guests from all over the world. My main goal is to have one person from every religious faith on at some point. So we're still working on that. But, you know, my brother is the booking manager, so he typically reaches out and also receives queries. We're pretty soft. Like, we don't really reject too many people. We do have, like, a long waiting list right now, so... We try to be selective, but only about not wasting our listeners' time. So we just want people who are willing to talk about their life, but we do. We try to get occupations. We've had retired police, like you said. We've had soldiers. We've had...
Sound healers.
Janus was really interesting from India. He was one of my favorite guests, just because you don't really even hear the word Janus in America very often. And he opened up about, you know, actually the subject we were talking about, Roe v. Wade, except... from the Indian side, so that was really interesting. But yeah, the show is definitely inspirational. It's definitely, I'm a non-serious person. I am full of ideas and philosophy. I write philosophy, humor is what I call it, on my weekly essays, which are tied into the show. And my goal in life is to get people to become more serious about laughing, if that makes any sense.
Well, and you know what? It's proven that laughter is the best medicine. I have seen our patients when they're stressed out and they're worried about things, their blood pressures are up. The minute you break the ice with a laugh or a joke, or you bring back a memory from childhood, or you talk about something pleasant, we actually see people's health improves. And I think you're doing a wonderful thing by having the guests that are on talk about this, you know, the purpose of life and death, in the way you do. So Now, you said that you spoke to people from India. Now, I was trying to get my nephew to call in, and he got extremely busy, so we're going to have to work on that for you. But did you speak to anyone about reincarnation and the spirituality about reincarnation, and how did you tie that in into your show?
Oh, my gosh, many times. But the most fascinating one was recently someone reached out to me, and she does past life hypnotic regression into past lives, and she gave me a free session. So I actually interviewed her and then did the free session, and then I wrote about it and talked about it, and it was pretty incredible. So, yes, reincarnations come up a lot. I would say the average person in America that I've interviewed, which is a weird statistic to throw out there, I would say they sort of give room to reincarnation. So I think it's becoming more and more of a plausible thing here in this culture. And then the person who's the most fascinating guest by just, like, sheer weird factor was a man named Christian Sundberg. I don't remember the episode number, but anyone who Googles that one, he claims to have prenatal memories. So he says he remembers what it's like in between lives, and he remembers picking this life. And his story is beyond compelling. I would recommend to anyone, just if you're going to check out one episode of the show, just listen to that, because he is confident and yet not out to tell us what to think or do.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I guess everybody have their own cultural beliefs and whatever comforts them when old age comes and Mr. Death or Mrs. Death comes. We know whether people believe in Christianity or Islam or Judaism or Hinduism or whatever it is, you have to find that comfort, right? But I've heard that people from some countries, they feel a sense of loss and they have many questions when death comes, because like in China, in the Far East, it's a lot of people feel like they have to pay respect to their ancestors and release their ancestors in order for them to have a happy spiritual afterlife. Have you done any shows with people who speak of such things?
Not officially, no. And I would love to have someone who really is doing that. I think the closest I've come to that is probably with some of the, like, I had one guest who's a transcendental meditating, like, monk, basically, for lack of a better word. And he talked a bit about that. And then I had another guest talk about our negative ancestral patterns and how the actions of our ancestors totally affect us, and that's really in our DNA. So I think that's a little bit on that. So yeah, I think I would really love to have someone talk more about that. I have heard of that, obviously.
Yeah, I was hoping that when my nephew called in on your show, he would speak like that on something like that, because in our culture, like after someone passes, you're supposed to have like a big feast. And on that day, you cook everything that the person used to like to eat, but then you have to leave some out for the dead. So you have to you have to have a prayer, you know, with the priest, and then you put a little bit of everything the person liked, and there's a certain place that they put it, and you know, supposedly the spirit will eat that and be happy at that feast. And if you don't cook the things that they like, I don't know what happens. But they would always say, oh, you have to get X, Y, Z, because this is what he liked or she liked. And I always looked forward to those feasts, because especially if the person liked meat. We didn't have a lot of money to buy meat. And we would get a lot of meat and food. And
be crashing funerals.
Yeah, crashing, you know, the 12 days dinner, you know, the feast. So, I mean, it's amazing how certain cultures find love and enjoyment and practicality in the afterlife, you know?
Doesn't say much for the Irish wakes that I went through in my whole life. The Irish wakes are drinking fests. So just the opposite, right? But what a fascinating, a storyline and podcast, certainly, to get all of those different perspectives of again, celebration of death or celebration of life. And you know, I think our closest thing to that is like the bucket list, right? People talk, Wayne, you always talk about your bucket list of the things that we want to do before we die.
Well, that's what his hospice patients told him.
Exactly right.
Right. He's right.
So it's like basing it off of that almost.
Right. And you know, Mike, I also work with in a nursing facility, and I've counseled a lot of hospice patients before they left our planet as well. And what I find releases them, I know we had a woman once whose son was hit by a garbage truck when he was 6 years old. And she, on her deathbed, she was praying to Jesus, and then she was saying that, I see him, and I'm so sorry he got hurt. I should have been watching him. He ran out the front door, and he got hit by this truck. But then when she died with a smile on her face because she was going to be reunited with him. So do you find that that's comforting as well in some of the people that you speak with, no matter which cultural background they come from?
Yeah, actually, I think from my hospital experience, something I learned that I think you're touching on is that a lot of times people need permission to die and they won't die. They'll like keep clinging to something. And so many times I would go into a room and I'd hold the person's hand. I'd say, it's okay now. Everything's been taken care of. Your family is here and they love you and everyone's ready for you to go when you want to go. You don't have to leave, but, you know, you have permission. And it was very surprising how often that worked. I mean, really all the time. And the reason we would do it is because the family was really suffering watching the person just waste away. And like, you know, all parties, no one wants to be living in that state, you know. Like, hospice is for people who have less than 6 months to live, so...
Well, it's really quality over quantity. So let's chat a little bit about the books. You're also an author. You've written some books. So tell us a little bit about your books. We have a few. We have like 5 minutes left. If you could tell us the names of your books and where we could find them and all that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess I should have said at the beginning, every single thing I do is launched from my website, which is mikeyopp.com. It's a play on my name. So mikeyopp.com. So if you go in there, you can find everything. The books, the novels that I've written, it's definitely my favorite thing I do in my career, and I have a new one coming out in the summer, I believe. It might even be the fall now, though. The COVID thing ruined the timeline of publishing a lot. So anyway, it's called Ardor, and it's about the world's most famous psychic, and it's a kid who finds out he's psychic from his grandma, and then he forgets about it, and then when he's 18, some really weird things start happening, and he realizes that he's psychic, and he doesn't want to be. And it doesn't matter. He has to be. So that's kind of the conflict in his life. And that's my fifth published novel. I'll start back all the way to the beginning. My first novel is called Dysfunction, and it's about people who accidentally get trapped underground after a major storm in Las Vegas, and they're all staying in a hotel, and then they can't get out. And it's about them, nine of them, living in this huge facility that's an emergency structure for thousands of people to survive in for up to, like, 10 years. So they just basically have unlimited supply of everything they need to live, but they can't get out and they can't contact anyone. My second novel is about time-traveling homeless people who carry magical dolls and try to help humanity, and then the doll gets split in half because the woman who's time-traveling gets hit by a dump truck, actually, ironically. And so that's my second novel. My third novel, which is, I believe, the greatest thing I'll probably ever leave on Earth, is called Too True to Be Good, and... it's a very serious, all these books are fiction, of course, story of a person who is kind of going through life, and he doesn't want to be a sucker, and he thinks his parents were suckers because they were middle class and they played by the rules, so he decides to start selling drugs, and life really unravels fast for him. That piece was so dark, and I got really good reviews, and I got, like, good feedback, but people said it really depressed them, and I even got depressed editing it and writing it. So I decided to come back with a comedy. So my fourth novel, which is actually in publication, it's, like, kind of hard to explain, but I had originally sold it to this Amazon program called Vela, and then they agreed to re-release the rights back to us, and then we had our team put it up as a regular book. So that's coming out, like, literally today, or it might already be online. But anyway, that one's called The Apology. It's a total comedy. It's about a 30-something who doesn't want to grow up in San Francisco, and he's facing rising rent prices, and everyone's just outpacing him, and he doesn't know what to do. And it's a comedy, and he falls in love.
I gather your family supports your writing career as well, because they're all involved in everything you do.
Yeah, my family supports me. My parents always supported me. I've had many careers on the side to help me get to where I am. I worked in restaurants for 10 years. I was a teacher for 9 years, and I work in publishing. I index books. So I always have many things going on. I'm a pretty, like, active person.
Have a writer's workshop, which is really good because there are so many people out there that have a story to tell, and they just need that extra oomph from someone to say, just get a notebook instead of writing it down.
Yeah, totally. And I really miss teaching. I love teaching. It's just so time consuming. So that's one of the ways to get back. And I actually want to go back to what you said when you were introducing me and before you started, which is really just like finding ways to give back, you know, as we get older is, I think, so important. So I love talking about my novels and my career, but I really, if I am on the radio right now, would just love to echo what you said, which is like, just try to find ways to give back.
Yeah, and Mike, do you find that writing is like a spiritual or therapeutic process for you? Because when I wrote one book, and it did quite well, and I found that it was, for me, it was like a cleansing of my soul to tell my story and leave that legacy behind, because I thought if I could make a difference with domestic violence and help people, why not? But do you find that it is sort of a calling? It's like an intervention. It's something in you is saying, you can do this and you have to do it.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I also think it's hilarious because a lot of people will go see a therapist, and the therapist will tell them you need to start journaling. And so what they're telling them is, yeah, your psyche needs to tell you things. And when you write, there's this flow that you get into. And the flow state is in sports. And I mean, we've all felt the flow state. We all know what I'm referring to. And so writing has that as well. And I think no matter who you are and how much you do or do not think you're intellectual, you're a writer. We're all writers. None of us are better at idea. Like, there's just an editing process that makes some of us appear to be better. But, you know, writing is at the core of, I think, all humans' existence. It's definitely both psychological and spiritual.
Right. So if someone wanted to get a hold of you for a workshop or your books or tune into Coffin Talk, give us your website one more time, and where can we find all your books?
Yeah, absolutely. So please head to mikeyopp.com, MikeyOpp.com. There's a big contact subscribe button there, so you can just contact me. I am busy, but I will always get back to people, unless someday I become ridiculously popular, which I don't think is likely. I will always take time to get back to people, and they can find all my novels at the first link on that website. It, underneath that is Humor, which is my weekly essays. Underneath that is podcasts. You can find my YouTube shows, music from my music career. I used to be a touring musician. So everything you want and more is there.
Now that I do know, I know you do get back to people when they reach out to you, because you always get back to me. And I'm so proud to know you, and I love what you're doing, because I feel like at Christmas and Thanksgiving and birthdays and anniversaries, why not bring up the topic about death and dying and make it in such a people are not fearful of it? Because I know that sometimes I meet people and I'll be like, gee, I feel like I've known that person all my life. And the similarities are there. And then I say, oh, well, I'm Hindu. I believe in reincarnation. Maybe this person was in my life before. Or I will see a tragedy in India. And the way the people handle the tragedy of a mudslide or a tsunami or floods is very different from other cultures, because we just believe, we pray, we, you know, have the funerals and whatnot. But some part of us says, well, those people are going to come back again. And it's comforting in the reincarnation world. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And please get us your nephew as a guest. And if he can't come on, we'd love to have you as well. So I totally agree with you, though. There's a way to talk about death that doesn't have to bum everyone out. And and it's something I just think everyone should be thinking about it. Not all the time and not with fear, definitely not with fear. And what you said is important too, which is love people while they're here and expect that love to keep coming around.
Right. And also that we all need to understand that every day we wake up is a great day. It's a day that God, in all his magnificent glory, has given us. And we really should try to, if we can, forgive and move on and help others. And it, at the end of the day, we really need a kinder, gentler, more mindful world and USA, one with less hate, less division, less racism, and quite frankly, what we just saw happen in Buffalo, less guns.
Yeah.
You know?
It's getting bad out there, and it doesn't have to be. We can all take it down a notch, and we can stop thinking that we're as different as, I would say, the media is trying to tell us all the time, you know, and I do. I completely agree with everything you just said.
Well, Mike Oppenheimer, thank you so much for calling in, and we will make sure we get all of this information out about you and about your podcast. I'm sure a lot of our friends and listeners will be interested to hear about it, because it's very interesting. But we're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Wayne Gales right after these messages.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer, featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida, we're heard on AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7, as well as online, Ellen. And we know people are tuning in because we get a lot of emails and text and hits on our website.
Globally
and
known,
we've got people
locally
lined
recognized.
Up. Yeah, we're booked until the end of August, pretty much.
That's right.
Exactly. We're doing good.
We are. 1510 WWBC. You can listen live. You just hit that listen live button. You may have to download something, but for the most part, you should be able to just click right in, and you'll hear us live each and every Monday here at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC. Or if you'd like to listen to our past shows, you can find them on, just hit that on-demand button, and you'll be able to pick the date. Or you can go to our website, cedamediainc.com. Or, of course, all of our Facebook pages have all of that information as well. You can look up CETA Biggie, I don't know if you can accept any more friends, so.
I can't.
But on the business pages, you can. So Viewpoint with Sita and Friends or SitaMediaInc.com.
I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I have so many things going on.
No more marriage proposals on Facebook.
So how did you find for me, Ellen? You found Wayne Gales, who was born in California. He's a world traveler. Wayne has visited 24 countries on 5 continents and all 50 states. He's an avid fisherman, a snorkeler, a gourmet chef, woodworker, a musician. He's sitting right next to me. He's raced cars, trucks, motorcycles, has 5 children. He's an author. How did you find him?
So my band plays out, and him and his wife are very avid listeners of live music. They listen to live music all over Brevard County, and we just hit it off right away. It was like we were fast friends, and he sat in with our band a few times as a bass player, and it's just been a fantastic friendship.
Awesome.
So when I knew that he came out with his new book, unfortunately, it was one of the children's books that he came out with the last part, and it was because of a tragedy that had happened in his family, and because of that book, it got us a little bit closer.
Awesome. So Wayne, you moved to Florida. Talk to us a little bit of our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Where are you from originally?
I was born in California. And like you mentioned, 17 years in Las Vegas. And then my work moved me out to Winter Park, Florida. And from there, I just kind of worked my way south. I went from Winter Park to Fort Lauderdale and then spent 7 years in the Keys, in Key West. So, and now I'm moving my way back north until we got to Melbourne eventually, and we're done. We're not going to go anywhere else but from here.
Right. And you dedicated your book to a girl named Tina, but your wife is also a Tina?
My wife
is Tina. You seem like you attract the Tina girls.
That book was dedicated to my Tina.
Oh, okay. It's the right Tina.
This is the right Tina.
The right
That's
Tina.
The correct Tina. Yep. Awesome. Okay. And so you have children and grandchildren, and I'm sure they're proud of you and all your writing.
We have 13 grandchildren. And actually, you know, my books have been somewhat, I guess, a fictional version of an autobiography. I always say I live myself vicariously through myself. But the other character in my book, the other main character, is actually the son of the main character, who is closely portrayed by my son. And ironically, I don't think he's ever read a word of any of my books. He listened to one of them on Audible once, but I think he was forced to. But my grandkids have embraced the children's books, and they've taken them to their school, and they've read them to kindergarten in first and third grade, and everybody loves them, so that's been the good part. They like Grandpa as a writer.
So how many books have you written up to date? Because I started one of them. I tell you, you're making me respect spices, and the spices from the Middle East, the nutmeg, the clove, the chive, turmeric. I'm like, gosh, if people only knew what happened for us to get these spices in the New World. How many have you written?
I've written 8 novels, and I've got the 9th one on the computer right now. I'm dabbling with it. I have to figure out a couple of plots, but I'll figure it out eventually. And like you mentioned, several of my books, or actually all of my books, have a historical or a historical fictional segment that works into how it portrays in today's world. A little bit like James Michener did. I didn't do that on purpose, just sort of backed into it.
And you are a world traveler. What have you picked up traveling all over the world that you've put into your books? Are some of your characters similar to the people you've met?
Everybody is a character similar to who I've met, just about. I mean, the people, I write about people that are good friends, and if I don't like them, I'll write about them and kill them. But I have several of my books include travels and places that I've been and things that I've done. I've always just loved, I worked for the hotel business, and they sent me all over. And before the hotel business, I was in a tour and travel business, and they sent me to Asia. But with the hotel business, it's been England and Germany and, Austria, Italy, France. I've been a little bit of everywhere, and then a lot of South America. So
everybody have a story to tell, right? And writing gives us that flow of speaking and writing and jotting things down so we could pass on whatever we want to pass on to the next generation. You also had a relationship with Mel Fisher, Which a lot of our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends probably don't know who he was, but tell us about him and the experiences you had with him.
Well, I had the privilege of meeting with Mel before he passed away. He passed away not long after I got to Key West. Of course, knew his stories. He was a guest judge at some of the events that I put on when I was down there, along with Captain Tony, who was another great Key West character celebrity. I have the privilege now of knowing Mel's daughter, Taffy, and her husband and their son. So I know the Fisher family down a couple different levels.
And they got a lot of treasures.
Yeah, they did.
They sure did a lot of dives.
They found a lot of treasure. They found $500 million worth of gold off of just two ships. And they're still finding, not actually gold, it was gold and silver. And emeralds. They're still finding that stuff out there. They continue to work the wrecks, and then the wrecks that Mel worked on before he moved to the Key West was just off the coast here, off between about Melbourne to Vero. There's a number of wrecks that sunk in 1715, and they found some of the materials there, and they're still finding things there right now. Friends of mine are diving there probably today as we speak.
And so what is the most difficult part of your artistic process in when you're writing?
Well, my philosophy is it doesn't really matter what you write. It matters that you write. And that's really the key word to go by. Put words down, put them in a row. It's not about money. It certainly isn't for me. It is, I guess, a way to deal with your inner thoughts and to... kind of let your thoughts out into the public. I really never planned to write more than one book, and I got it done, and it was great, and people started clamoring, we want more.
Yeah, I was just concerned, how do you figure out who the main character's names is going to be?
The main character in all my books is the guy named Russell Bricklin Wall.
Brick. Yeah.
And
Brick could be in a movie. The book should be a movie. This series should be a movie.
Costner should play me.
Yeah. And Brad,
if you're listening,
how about Brad Pitt?
No, he's too short, too little.
Exactly.
Brick is a little bit
I think Allie wants to jump in here. Allie, who should be in the movies?
The Rock.
The Rock.
We were just speaking of him.
There's a character that he would be absolutely perfect for in the books.
Right.
But you'll have to read them to find out. But, I had thought of this character since I was probably 11 years old. I mean, really young, 11 or 12. I think I started reading Island and always thought about, had this character batting around in my head. And several years ago, actually, after I had left the Keys, my wife was working nights and I got tired of Discovery Channel. I sat down on the keyboard and I banged out a book in like 80 days and I created that character, and the book was terrible. After a couple of rewrites, it turned into a fairly decent book called Treasure Key.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and your books are filled with mystery. It's filled with secrets. It's filled with people that came back from the past because they had something that was going on, the mob and things like that. How did you come up with all those different kind of scenarios?
You know, I wish I knew. if I knew, I'd be writing books or in movies probably the rest of my life. You just start on one, and the other philosophy about writing a book is you jump off the cliff and build your wings on the way down. I don't write an outline. I don't write a storyline. If I try too hard, I can't write. I have to just let it flow, and that's really the way to make it work.
Because a father and son dynamic duo, they seem to have a lot of stuff going on with the two of them. The books are like, it's a series of books. And so the first book, the father and son went off with his friend. They went off with a friend because they needed to get away. And then what?
Well, the first book, the father was a homeless, jobless person living on a houseboat. And they found treasure. At that time, the son was like 13 or 14 years old. Now, the son's in his almost early 30s, and so I've left the timeline to kind of fit both the main character and the son. So they've created adventures, and slowly the last two books have kind of segued into the son speaking in first person, or at least a little bit more about him. And so the father is in a somewhat of a semi-retired condition. Of course, after having been shot and stabbed and gosh knows what's happened in the first 10 books.
I was going to say the Navy SEAL, right?
There's not much left.
Yeah, and you know, you're giving us, the readers, some history as well, because I didn't know about the Spice Islands. And I mean, how do you research for your books? Because you're accurate with the timeline of pretty much everything you're writing in these books.
Well, thank heaven for the internet. You can do a lot of research, and then also a lot of consulting. There, a lot of the historical part of the treasure diving, especially in the Keys and off the Florida East Coast, I have. I'll write a segment and then send it to a real treasure diver, and he'll call me up or he'll read it back and he'll say, this part's right and this part's stupid. And we'll clean it up to the point that if he likes it, it's probably pretty accurate.
And Wayne's son is an actual treasure hunter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he
dives and everything.
So this is something that's near and dear to the family's heart. And just knowing Mel Fisher's pretty cool, but some of the other things are pretty cool too as well. Like your pendants that you have, that you and Tina both have from one of the ships, right?
Yep, I've got a 4 real coin from the Nuestra Senora de Atocha that sunk in 1622 west of Key West. And that's the ship that Mel found, collected a gigantic amount of coin, silver and gold and emeralds. And I've actually got an emerald from the Atocha also. And I was designing a website, and they said, well, how much you want for the website? And I said, I don't want a dime. I just want one of those coins. And I was fortunate enough, and I had a bezel put around it, and that's kind of like, that's your official Key West dog tag.
Exactly. And so, I think the metal detector sales will probably go up after this show.
So what is the best money you've ever spent on becoming an author?
It's hard to say. You know, I design my own covers. I've self-published almost everything I've done. I've turned it over to a publisher now, but most of what I have done, I've just done myself. The children's books I self-publish, I have them illustrated by one of my wife Tina's grade school friends, and she's illustrated the books, and I'll do a book for her, and she'll do one for me. She's an absolutely amazing artist, Lori Ebakuz is her name, but she has brought I write 24 lines of poems, and she turns it into an amazing children's book.
Oh, that's great, right? Yeah. So we know that our readers also make demands on us, right? So how do you balance making demands on the reader and taking care of the reader at the same time?
There's a consistency that's really important. If you're going to write a series, you have to make the book both stand alone on its own, and also refer back to previous, you know, as you mentioned, I think before, people become just part of the book. They start to think those are real people.
Yes.
And real places and real things. And they kind of get engrossed in a story like you would on a TV series, on a soap opera or whatever it is. You think they're real people.
It's like me watching Chris Cuomo on CNN, and now he's no longer there. I don't watch it anymore because he was part of my fam. I mean, we invite these characters from our books, or we invite people from television shows, actors and actresses, into our homes. They take up personal space and our time, right?
Yes,
and
they
think your characters do too.
They become part of your life, and they've become part of, I guess they're a gift to me and also a small piece of personal hell. You write a book and think, well, okay, I've written that book, and then if it's any good, if you have a following, and I've sold, I'm not James Mister, but I've probably sold 35,000 books. And you write a book and the people will immediately start clamoring for the next story. And the danger in writing in TV series or movies or anything else, when you write a sequel, if you write after one or two books, you have a real tendency to become dark, and to try to keep a book interesting and light after four or five books. It's a lot more work than you would think.
Yeah. And do you find it's difficult to write about characters from the opposite sex? Or is there like an image you have when you write about the love scenes or the characters falling in love?
I think it's probably easier to write about that than you would think. The main character in all of my books is a person that's my love interest in the book. She is a real person. She is an absolutely fabulous, great old friend. We've known each other for 30 years, and I've kissed her once. Her and my
secrets
wife.
Secrets coming out of Viewpoint with
Well,
Cedar
no,
Prince.
The funny, I was at a trade show, and I got on a cell phone. We were sitting having dinner or something across from each other, and I called my wife up to say hi to Karen. And we got done with the phone call. Tina said, give Karen a kiss for me. And that was the only time I kissed her. And it skeeved us out both, I tell you.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Mallory Cohen in the book.
And don't forget, too, some of the things, I think one or two of your books are also translated in Spanish.
I have the first book translated into Spanish. I've had the children's books done in Spanish, German, French, Portuguese, and Hebrew.
Yeah, which is a huge deal. Wow. I mean, that's for all of, so everybody in the whole world.
Right. So we have to tell our listeners, we're speaking with Wayne Gales, and he is an author, and he's published a series of 8 fictional novels and has written 5 illustrated children's books. His novels combine contemporary mysteries and historical fiction, and it's a Key West theme. So if you weren't writing, what would you be doing?
Well, I have other lives, of course. I play music with Ellen sometimes, which is the real love of my life. Playing music with the Phoenix Band is just the greatest thing in the world you can do. Oh. I build things. I repurpose wood, lobster traps. I'll turn them into coffee tables and wine racks and picture frames. And I just did a shadow box out of old fence wood.
You keep busy, Wayne.
Yeah, it keeps me busy.
Yeah.
And I also work. I actually am working. I do work in golf operations at Suntree Resort.
Well, that's wonderful. And so when was your first book published? Do you remember? And do you remember that feeling when your first book got published?
Oh, yeah. It was, 2000 and I want to say 11, something like that. You get the first book published and you immediately start looking for the movie rights. You think you're just going to,
Did you have a book signing? Did you have a big party or anything?
I did book signings. I've always done book signings with every book until the last two. I've said now, the last few since I've lived in Melbourne, I haven't done Intercoastal Brewery, and we do book signings there and people come and it's a lot of fun. But, it's hard to say how the next book's going to go. It's just really hard to tell.
Right. And you wrote some children's book. And the one, My Sisters in Heaven, it actually teared me up. You don't have to go into detail about the books. But what made you decide to write the children's books?
Well, I had two strokes and a heart attack and dislocated my shoulder. And I thought I probably better start writing shorter books. I just wrote a 24-line poem, and I was talking to my friend Lori one day, and I knew she drew great art, and I said, what do you think about doing a children's or doing an illustrator or a kid's book? And she said, well, I've tried several times and I can't ever get them published and I can't ever get them done. And I said, I'll tell you what, you write the pictures, I'll write the words, and I can get you published.
So how long did it take you to write this book? It probably took you less than an hour.
Yeah, probably 2 hours.
You're brilliant.
I write them really quick. Now, it takes me 2 weeks to get them assembled. I've actually built them myself and published them on Amazon. So it's all me all the way. But they're simple books. And as Ellen mentioned earlier, I know I did have a tragedy in my life. My son lost his daughter, his 3-year-old daughter, to a head-on collision. And he's really having a tough time dealing with it, as was I for a while. It was last November. And Ellen was aware of what had happened, and she knew I was a writer, and she said maybe you would put it to words in some way that might help you deal with what's going on.
And help other people, too, at the same
and
time.
And I literally, she just thought I should write it for myself. I think that was really her goal. And she, I put it to words, and I actually sent her the poem, and she thought it was okay.
Yeah,
and I contacted Lori. She'd already done all the stuff I really asked her to do, and I said, "Could we do one more?" And she illustrated that book and brought it to life. And it's a great book, and I really enjoy it. It does not sell many, But the people that read it, it touches.
Yeah, maybe we should mention it to our friends at Hospice of St. Francis. But we have about 3 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you really quick. Are there any ethics in writing about historical figures? Because your books do touch on history a lot.
Well, if you're going to write history, if you're going to write real history, write the truth, not what you think the truth should be. And in all honesty, that probably goes for now as much as it does for then. Instead of interpreting a book, interpreting a Bible, interpreting
the Quran,
any
the
other,
Ramayan. Yeah.
Absolutely. Instead of interpreting, you're maybe better off to just try to understand.
Right. And most of the times, we really should use history to make our lives better, right? We should see what happened before the people who came before us and make sure that we are trying to use their experience to make our life on Earth better and leave a gentle, kinder world, a world where people can try to exist knowing what we did to in the past.
Those,
and your books
that
do
don't
give us...
embrace history will learn to relive it.
Right. And now, before we go, we have 1 minute left. You make a good gumbo, I heard.
I've been told that.
We're going to have a party.
Award-winning.
We're going to have to use my big old yard and do a potluck with all our guests. And
I
see, Allie, do you want to jump in here and say anything? Because I think you're having a great time listening to what Wayne is saying.
I'm having a fabulous time. I'm just eager to dig into Wayne's books.
Yes. And there's got so anything else in the works? Is there another book coming up with Brick and his son?
Book number 9 is coming up. And I have a working title, Once Upon a Time in Key West, which is not very original, but probably interesting.
You are amazing. Like, how do you belt out so many books to keep us, the readers, happy, knowing very well that unless you kill somebody off, you're gonna have to still be writing books?
It keeps me off the streets.
Yeah, and you know what it does too, and it gives you purpose. Every day you wake up, you're doing something for someone else.
That's right.
And where can we find the books and your website?
I'm on Amazon. It's the G-A-L-E-S. I'm not here to sell books, but that's how you spell the name.
Of course, if somebody buys a book, why not?
Of course you're here to sell books, right.
I mean, why not?
Also,
I mean,
on tropicalauthors.com, you can look up Wayne Gales, and there's a great selection of all the selections of his books, as well as a little bio on there as well.
We'd love to have you back. Can you have 30 seconds to give some quick tips to anyone who wants to write a book? So 30 seconds, what would you tell someone who is out there that wants to get a story out, but they're stuck in writer's block?
Well, like I said before, it's not what you write, but that you write. Put words down, get them in a row, clean them up, and if you think they're good, you find somebody that'll publish it for you.
If not, Amazon has certainly made it possible for all of us to become writers.
Amazon will publish anybody.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's 8 million Amazon books out
I
right
see
now.
Allie's head is turning. She might be writing a book about Doug.
That's right.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, and she could, believe
me.
She
could. Yeah.
Without a doubt. Well, again, folks, thank you so much for tuning in here to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here each and every Monday here in sunny Cocoa, Florida at 1 p.m. Eastern Time here on 1510 WWBC 94.7. 99.9 and 100.7 here in Brevard County. Thank you so much for tuning in. And Sita, thank you for another fantastic week, another great show. We'll see you soon.
A great friend.
A great friend.
And we'll have gumbo.